and be brought into the fear of the Lord, to receive his wisdom from above, by which all things were made and created, that with that wisdom he may order all things to the glory of God. Whereas he calleth me a chief upholder of the Quaker sect, I answer, the Quakers is not a sect, but in the power of God, which was before sects were, and witnessed the election before the world began, and are come to live in the life in which the prophets and apostles lived, who gave forth the scriptures. Therefore are we hated by envious, wrathful, wicked, persecuting men. After the word sect, footnote 160, George Fox never admitted that the Quakers were a sect, nor did any friend of the first 50 years. There was but one church, composed of those who obeyed the light and in whom Christ dwelt. Of this church, Fox and his followers claim to be members. This position has been ably put in Thomas Hancock's Peculium, a prize essay. But God is the upholder of us all by his mighty power, and preserves us from the wrath of the wicked that would swallow us up. And whereas he saith that I, together with others of my fanatic opinion, as he calls it, have of late endeavored to raise insurrections and to embroil the whole kingdom in blood, I answer, this is altogether false. To these things I am as a child. I know nothing of them. The postures of war I never learned. My weapons are spiritual and not carnal, for with carnal weapons I do not fight. I am a follower of him who said, my kingdom is not of this world. And though these lies and slanders are raised upon me, I deny drawing any carnal weapon against the king or parliament, or any man upon the earth. For I am come to the end of the law, but am in that which saves men's lives. A witness I am against all murderers, plotters, and all such as would embrue the nation in blood. For it is not in my heart to have any man's life destroyed. And as for the word fanatic, which signifies furious, foolish, mad, etc., he might have considered himself before he had used that word, and have learned the humility which goes before honor. We are not furious, foolish, or mad, but through patience and meekness have borne lies, slanders, and persecutions many years, and have undergone great sufferings. The spiritual man that wrestles not with flesh and blood, and the spirit that reproves sin in the gate, which is the spirit of truth, wisdom, and sound judgment, is not mad, foolish, furious, which fanatic signifies, but all are of a mad, furious, foolish spirit, that in their furiousness, foolishness, and rage wrestle with flesh and blood, with carnal weapons. This is not the spirit of God, but of error, that persecutes in a mad, blind zeal, like Nebuchadnezzar and Saul. Inasmuch as I am ordered to be kept prisoner till I be delivered by order from the king or parliament, therefore I have written these things to be laid before you, the king and parliament, that ye may consider of them before ye act anything therein, that ye may weigh in the wisdom of God the intent and end of men's spirits, lest ye act the thing that will bring the hand of the Lord upon you and against you, as many who have been in authority have done before you, whom God hath overthrown. In him we trust, whom we fear, and cry unto day and night, who hath heard us, doth hear us, and will hear us, and avenge our cause. Much innocent blood hath been shed. Many have been persecuted to death by such as were in authority before you, whom God hath vomited out because they turned against the just. Therefore consider your standing now that ye have the day, and receive this as a warning of love to you. From an innocent sufferer in bonds and close prisoner in Lancaster Castle, called George Fox. After this, Margaret fell determined to go to London to speak with the king about my being taken, and to show him the manner of it, and the unjust dealing and evil usage I had received. Footnote 161. Margaret Fell was now the head of Swarthmore Hall, Judge Fell having died in 1658. As the arrest was made from her house, she felt herself implicated in the false charge. She wrote a vigorous letter about the case to the proper magistrates. When Justice Porter heard of this, he vapored that he would go and meet her in the gap. But when he came before the king, having been a zealous man for the Parliament against the king, several of the courtiers spoke to him concerning his plundering their houses, so that he quickly had enough of the court and soon returned into the country. Meanwhile, the jailer seemed very fearful and said he was afraid Major Porter would hang him because he had not put me in the dark house. But when the jailer waited on him after his return from London, he was very blank and down and asked how I did, pretending he would find a way to set me at liberty. But having overshot himself in his mittimus by ordering me to be kept a prisoner till I should be delivered of the king or Parliament, he had put it out of his power to release me if he would. He was the more down also upon reading a letter which I sent him, for which he was in the height of his rage and threats against me, and thought to ingratiate himself into the king's favor by opposing me. I was moved to write to him and put him in mind how fierce he had been against the king and his party, though now he would be thought zealous for the king. Among other things in my letter, I call to his remembrance that when he held Lancaster Castle for the Parliament against the king, he was so rough and fierce against those that favored the king that he said he would leave them neither dog nor cat if they did not bring him provision to the castle. I asked him also whose great buck's horns were those that were in his house, and whence he had both them and the wainscot with which he sealed his house. Had he them not from Hornby Castle? About this time, Anne Curtis of Reading came to see me, and understanding how I stood committed, it was upon her also to go to the king about it. Her father, who had been sheriff of Bristol, was hanged near his own door for endeavoring to bring the king in, upon which consideration she had some hopes the king might hear her on my behalf. Accordingly, when she returned to London, she and Margaret Fell went to the king together, who, when he understood whose daughter she was, received her kindly. Her request to him being to send for me up and hear the cause himself, he promised her he would, and he commanded his secretary to send an order for bringing me up. But when they came to the secretary for the order, he said it was not in his power. He must go according to law, and I must be brought up by a writ of habeas corpus before the judges. So he wrote to the judge of the king's bench, signifying that it was the king's pleasure I should be sent up by a writ of habeas corpus. Accordingly, a writ was sent and delivered to the sheriff, but because it was directed to the Chancellor of Lancaster, the sheriff put it off to him. On the other hand, the Chancellor would not make the warrant upon it, but said the sheriff must do that. At length, both Chancellor and sheriff were got together, but being both enemies to truth, they sought occasion for delay, and found an error in the writ, which was that, being directed to the Chancellor, it said, George Fox in prison under your custody, whereas the prison I was in was not in the Chancellor's custody, but the sheriff's. So the word your should have been his. Upon this, they returned the writ to London again, only to have that one word altered. When it was altered and brought down again, the sheriff refused to carry me up unless I would seal a writing to him and become bound to pay for the sealing and the charge of carrying me up, which I denied, telling them I would not seal anything. I was moved also to write to the king to exhort him to exercise mercy and forgiveness toward his enemies, and to warn him to restrain the profaneness and looseness that was risen up in the nation upon his return. To the king, King Charles. Thou camest not into this nation by sword, nor by victory of war, but by the power of the Lord. Now, if thou dost not live in this power, thou wilt not prosper. If the Lord hath showed thee mercy and forgiven thee, and thou dost not show mercy and forgive, God will not hear thy prayers, nor them that pray for thee. If thou dost not stop persecution and persecutors, and take away all laws that hold up persecution about religion, if thou persist in them and uphold persecution, that will make thee as blind as those that have gone before thee. For persecution hath always blinded those that have gone into it. Such God by his power overthrows, doeth his valiant acts upon, and bringeth salvation to his oppressed ones. If thou bear the sword in vain, and let drunkenness, oaths, plays, May games, as setting up of maypoles, with the image of the crown atop of them, with such like abominations and vanities, be encouraged or go unpunished, the nation will quickly turn like Sodom and Gomorrah, and be as bad as those men of the old world who grieved the Lord till he overthrew them. So he will overthrow you if these things be not suppressed. Hardly ever before has there been so much wickedness at liberty as there is at this day, as though there were no terror nor sword of magistracy. Such looseness doth not grace a government, nor please them that do well. Our prayers are for them that are in authority, that under them we may live a godly life in peace, and that we may not be brought into ungodliness by them. Hear and consider, and do good in thy time, whilst thou hast power. Be merciful and forgive. That is the way to overcome and obtain the kingdom of Christ. Signed, G.F. It was long before the sheriff would yield to remove me to London unless I would seal a bond to him and bear the charges, which I still refused to do. Then they consulted how to convey me up, and first concluded to send up a party of horse with me. I told them, if I were such a man as you have represented me to be, you would have need to send a troop or two of horse to guard me. When they considered what a charge it would be to them to send up a party of horse with me, they altered their purpose, and concluded to send me up guarded only by the jailer and some bailiffs. But upon further consideration they found that this also would be a great charge to them, and therefore they sent for me to the jailer's house, and told me that if I would put in bail, that I would be in London on such a day of the term. I should have leave to go up with some of my own friends. I told them I would neither put in bail nor give one piece of silver to the jailer, for I was an innocent man, that they had imprisoned me wrongfully and laid a false charge upon me. Nevertheless, I said, if they would let me go up with one or two of my friends to bear me company, I might go up and be in London on such a day, if the Lord should permit, and if they desired it, I or any of my friends that went with me would carry up their charge against myself. When they saw they could do no otherwise with me, the sheriff consented that I should come up with some of my friends, without any other engagement than my word, to appear before the judges at London such a day of the term, if the Lord should permit. Thereupon I was let out of prison and went to Swarthmore, where I stayed 2 or 3 days, and thence went to Lancaster, and so to Preston, having meetings amongst friends till I came into Cheshire, to William Gandy's, where was a large meeting without doors, the house not being sufficient to contain it. That day the Lord's everlasting seed, which is the heir of the promise, was set over all, and friends were turned to it. Thence I came into Staffordshire and Warwickshire, to Anthony Bickliffe's, and at Nuneaton, at a priest's widow's house, we had a blessed meeting, wherein the everlasting word of life was powerfully declared, and many were settled in it. Footnote 162. Nuneaton was only 2 miles from his home at Drayton, but he seemed not to have stopped for a visit. then traveling on, visiting friends' meetings in about 3 weeks' time from my coming out of prison, I reached London. Richard Huberthorne and Robert Withers being with me. When we came to Charing Cross, multitudes of people were gathered together to see the burning of the bowels of some of the old king's judges who had been hanged, drawn, and quartered. We went next morning to Judge Mallet's chamber. He was putting on his red gown to sit in judgment upon some more of the king's judges. He was then very peevish and froward, and said I might come another time. We went again to his chamber when there was with him Judge Foster, who was called the Lord Chief Justice of England. With me was one called Esquire Marsh, who was one of the bedchamber to the king. When we had delivered to the judges the charge that was against me, and they had read to those words that I and my friends were embroiling the nation in blood, etc., they struck their hands on the table. Whereupon I told them that I was the man whom that charge was against, but I was as innocent as any such thing as a newborn child, and had brought it up myself, and some of my friends came up with me without any guard. As yet they had not minded my hat, but now seeing it on, they said, "What, do you stand with your hat on?" I told them I did not so in any contempt of them. Then they commanded it to be taken off, and when they called for the marshal of the king's bench, they said to him, "You must take this man and secure him, but let him have a chamber, and not be put among the prisoners." "My lord," said the marshal, "I have no chamber to put him into. My house is so full I cannot tell where to provide a room for him but amongst the prisoners." "Nay," said the judge, "you must not put him in amongst the prisoners." But when the marshal still answered that he had no other place wherein to put me, Judge Foster said to me, "Will you appear tomorrow about 10 o'clock at the King's Bench Bar in Westminster Hall?" I said, "Yes, if the Lord gives me strength." Then said Judge Foster to the other judge, "If he says yes and promises it, you may take his word." So I was dismissed. Next day I appeared at the King's Bench Bar at the hour appointed. Robert Withers, Richard Huberthorne, and Esquire Marsh going with me. I was brought into the middle of the court, and as soon as I came in, was moved to look around and turning to the people say, "Peace be among you." The power of the Lord spread over the court. The charge against me was read openly. The people were moderate and the judges cool and loving, and the Lord's mercy was to them. But when they came to that part which said that I and my friends were embroiling the nation in blood and raising a new war, and that I was an enemy to the king, etc., they lifted up their hands. Then, stretching out my arms, I said, "I am the man whom that charge is against, but I am as innocent as a child concerning the charge, and have never learned any war postures." And said I, "Do you think that, if I and my friends had been such men as the charge declares, I would have brought it up myself against myself? Or that I should have been suffered to come up with only one or two of my friends with me? Had I been such a man as this charge sets forth, I had need to be carted with a troop or two of horse. But the sheriff and magistrates of Lancashire thought fit to let me and my friends come up with it ourselves, nearly 200 miles, without any guard at all, which, ye may be sure, they would not have done had they looked upon me as such a man." Then the judge asked me whether it should be filed or what I would do with it. I answered, "Ye are the judges and able, I hope, to judge in this matter. Therefore do with it what ye will, for I am the man these charges are against, and here ye see I have brought them up myself. Do ye what